Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, it's really disappointing that we don't get to physically see Joey Harrington this week. He has to do a phoner.
But it's a little uncomfortable that you've now taken a picture of Joey and are putting it in front of the desk and longingly staring at it. It's making me uncomfortable.
I had to, Joe. I had to.
Well, at least, you know, Sook, now we're in the same boat because, like, weekly, like, I've felt that discomfort.
Yeah.
And so now you can experience that with me.
Yeah, it's equal.
Right? Is it weird that I have a cardboard cut out of you?
It's a little strange.
Define strange.
Let me ask you this.
See, he's into it.
I want to ask you this because, I mean, you were a big deal. Still are. But, you know,
New York City billboard? Yeah, you're talking about me or him?
Well, both of you.
Okay,
I mean,
thanks.
You're both big deals. What is the strangest piece of Joey memorabilia that you have or that you've seen?
Uh-oh.
Are you asking me or are you asking Isaac?
Well, I know what Isaac's is, but we can't share with that with the folks. I'm asking you. Did you keep any of that stuff or did you, you know, do you... Is that something that, you know, maybe kids take a look at and kind of laugh at? But do you have anything from the olden days there?
You know, it's funny. I was actually just going through some of the boxes down at my foundation office. And, you know, I have my Fiesta Bowl jersey and helmet and shoes and, you know, that type of stuff. I've got my old play. You know, I've got my game plan book from the Fiesta Bowl. All the plays that we had in the game plan that week and all the, you know, my notes and stuff. But nothing that I can think of that's like overtly strange.
No one, you never saw anyone with like, you know, like t-shirts or posters, anything that people had made up.
Yeah, not offhand. Mm.
And you don't
Sorry
have any
to ruin your segment there. You know, I thought you thought, oh man, we're going to take this in a really cool place.
And I was like, great. No.
Joey's pretty lame.
He's got a playbook.
Wait, so it's all boxed up? Like you don't have anything in your house at all that is commemorative of the Joey Harrington golden days?
I got a few things around, but not, you know, I've got my bowl rings and but nothing really, you know, out
all
and
right.
about.
All right.
You know, honestly, I mean, part of it is I don't want my kids to see it and think that it's something that they have to do. Right. I want them to make their own choices and I want them to have their own ideas and their own interests. And I don't want them like walking through the house, you know, on the way to their bedroom and every day see like, you know, dad's Fiesta Bowl jersey or the Fiesta Bowl, you know, MVP trophy or something like that and think, oh man, that's what I got to live up to. I mean, that's, you know, and plus in all honesty, a lot of my stuff was like, because I was that guy who was always a finalist but never actually won anything. You know, it's like, hey, Davey O'Brien, finalist. Hey, Heisman Trophy, finalist. Hey, Walter Camp, finalist. It's like, hey, cool. That's like all the second place, you know, participant trophies. So, yeah.
Yeah, I had that same thing with, I was worried about my son, you know, doing that same thing. And then he turned out to be tiny and Korean. So that kind of took care of him following in my footsteps. Not many.
Well, that's one, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I'm saying, if you want.
Hey, Jeremy Lin.
It's a very easy way to make sure that your son doesn't follow in your offensive line footsteps is marry a 4'11 Asian woman. And that pretty much eliminates him from offensive line play for life.
Wow. That is one way to do it.
Yeah, I'm just
that's one way to do it.
I'm saying I'm just throwing that out there for future reference.
And your kids are super aware of who daddy was. I mean, I'm no offense, but when we had those teenagers in the other day that were like job shadowing or whatever, they were just hanging out. I was telling them we were interviewing you and they were like, wait, who?
Yeah, like, well, no clue.
Yeah,
the best is like, I'll get the kids who'll come up now and like ask for an autograph, but they'll kind of be looking over their shoulder and be like, hey, wait, dad, is this the guy, dad?
Yeah, that's the one.
Is this the guy? I'm supposed to get your autograph for my dad back there. No, my kids actually have been are more aware because of like friends who will say something. It's like, oh, dude, your dad was in the NFL. I'm like, what? That guy? Or
and
now my youngest, now my youngest is we've kind of had to work out of that. Well, my dad was famous. Like, he doesn't know what that actually truly means. But someone said it to him once. He's like, right. Oh, really? Oh, my dad is famous. Oh, hey, did you know my dad's famous? It's like, okay, hold on. Like, that's let's take a deep breath here. Let's talk, buddy.
I love it.
They don't. I mean, they get it, but they don't really. I try not to overwhelm them or just say this is what you have to be.
Yeah, that's good. Joe Harrington every Friday. Courtesy BMW of Portland, Portland's only BMW dealer where relationships matter, BMWPortland.com. At what point did the patented 1080 The Fan Joey Harrington worry meter peak against USC?
About the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, it was pretty hairy. It was 10-0, looking like maybe 17.
I was thinking I maybe should have adjusted up to about a 973 by intervals of 17.
Yep.
On the worry meter. No, that was 2 weeks ago. We went up to like 5,000 last week.
I think we did, and I think our intervals were maybe 13, but I don't remember.
It's an evolving thing.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. It wasn't so much that they fell behind quickly. It was the manner in which USC was able to move the ball so efficiently right out of the gates. That's what made me nervous. Because we have, if you haven't come to expect it, you should. For the rest of the season, here's what you should expect. A slow building Oregon team that closes well in the fourth quarter, right? You know, Suk, you should know this. Like, teams that are built on strong offensive line play, tough smash mouth defense, those teams aren't the ones that come blazing out of the gates right away. Those are the ones that hit you in the mouth, and they may only get 2 to 3 yards per carry in the first quarter. But then in the second quarter, it's 3 to 4 yards. And then in the third quarter, it's 5 to 6 yards. And then they just start wearing you down by the end. And that's what we've seen from this Oregon team. The thing that made me a little bit nervous, like I said, is the fact that USC just came out and went, bop, 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 touchdown. Bop, 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 field goal. And now it's 10-0 before you could blink. And it's like, oh, man, our defense has been pretty good. If this is how it's going to be, we could have a little bit of fight on our hands.
Yeah, it's like a boxer that just goes to the body. And then in the late rounds, those are called the championship rounds. And the thing that I kind of been impressed with is second half adjustments. And I think you've seen what a big-time defensive coordinator can do coming in. USC's got receivers. Pittman and Vaughn are both going to play in the NFL. Those guys are legit. And I thought Oregon did a great job in the second half making adjustments to that. And give Arroyo credit. I think he has grown up a lot here in this last month. And the second half adjustments and game plan, I think, have really bailed Oregon out of a lot of sticky situations here. And I give a lot of credit to the coaching staff.
That's let's say two different points, offensively and defensively. Defensively, we talked about it 2 weeks ago when Washington State went big over the top and a couple of DBs went palms up in the middle of the field. Like, no, wait, you're supposed to get him. Like, what is going on? We didn't see that against USC. And that is exactly a credit to the coaching staff to make sure that those guys were ready to face arguably the best receiving core in the conference. And then, like you said, offensively, Arroyo has done a great job, I think, since the Colorado game. That's really when I saw it kind of click, is that in the first half of the Colorado game, they went from a team that had been run, pass to start the game to a team that could go pass, run. And they were able to, they didn't go pass, run, and cut it loose like some teams would do with a quarterback like Justin. But what they did is they got him more involved early. They actually put the load on his shoulders and allowed the running game to be a great complement, as opposed to, what happened at the end of that Auburn game, which was they were so focused on the run that they forgot that they had, arguably the best quarterback in the country. And so you got to give Marcus credit. He's done a really nice job of evolving with the, not just like game planning and adjustments, but evolving with the type of players that he has available. In those first couple of games, he had nobody outside. And now you've seen the emergence of a couple wide receivers, and you're starting to see the offense open up a little bit. And, you got to give those coaches credit.
A lot of people think they may be due for one of those, clunkers. But I don't know, man. I first of all, the way they're constructed, like you say, just you can trust them over four quarters. They have the big boys. And then I was going to ask you about the bye week too. Boy, I think this bye week comes at a great time because we were talking last week about three huge games in a row. I feel like getting a bye to saddle up for the final three games so that you don't slip up is enormous. And I just wonder your perspective on a player's perspective on how big bye weeks are and specifically how big this bye week may be for Oregon.
So this one is perfect. This one is absolutely perfectly timed because you said it, this stretch run, once you hit November, I don't want to say it doesn't matter how good you are, but what I will say is that every team, no matter how good they are, will face a huge amount of adversity for one reason or another, whether it's, you know, guys are just gassed and they're tired at the end of the year, whether somebody is giving them their best shot and trying to make their season by knocking off a top 10 team in November. You see it every year, right? You know, you see, I guarantee that there will be two teams at the very least, and obviously excluding the LSU-Alabama game this weekend, but there'll be at least two teams from the top 10 that lose in this last month of the season, a game that they are not expected to lose, a game that you'll look at and say, whoa, I didn't see that one coming. And it's because these guys are just, they're gassed.
Yeah.
By the end of the year, they're just so tired of taking everybody's best shot that, you know, like you said a minute ago, Suk, like a boxer, you know, they just get worn down and somebody catches them. And that's why this bye week is great. It's because you have another chance to reload, to refocus and prepare for one last push.
In that event, the next three games they're going to be favored. So let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to ask Joey about signs of a potential letdown. I mean, what do you look for? I mean, you were a team leader. What to watch for there? And then we'll talk about the college football playoff rankings. More with Joey Harrington, brought to you by BMW of Portland, coming up next on The Fan. All right, we're back with Joey Harrington. Phoner this week, disappointed, but we have his cardboard cut out to stare longingly at. So signs of a potential letdown. We were talking about this bye week coming at a great time. I think that second bye, by the way, is just...
it's huge.
It's just enormous, and the timing of it is important. And Oregon's got a great spot here where they can now recalibrate for the final three games, and they'll be favored in all three of those games. But as a team leader, quarterback, a guy that other players look to, what kinds of things do you look for or did you look for in terms of a potential letdown? Maybe seeing signs that your team maybe not taking an opponent seriously enough.
You know, at this point in the season, I don't know that it's that you're not taking the opponent seriously enough as much as it would be like you get into a game and realize you're just flat, right? Sometimes you can prepare and sometimes you can be ready, but you know, that ball kicks off and all of a sudden you just don't have it. And that's when you need the guys, that's when you need your leaders, your seniors to grab people. I've said it before. You need them to grab you by the face mask and say, get your butt in gear. And if you don't have it, then hop on my shoulders because I'm going to take you there. And that's what the leaders have to do, is they have to be aware, not necessarily, I mean, every day at practice, people are harping on you to be prepared. I mean, that's the coaches, right? That's their job, to get guys ready. As a team leader, it's your job on Saturday to make sure that when guys aren't feeling it, that I don't want to say they fall in line, but that you're there to pick them up, that you're there to carry them across the finish line. Because when you can do that once or twice, then they start to believe in you, right? It's that idea of, you know, I always told people, well, how are you, you know, they would ask, well, how are you so confident? How are you so, you know, were you always so, did you always believe that you were going to win? How are you able to put that forth? I said, well, I didn't. Most of the time I just faked it, right? You know, like you just kind of pretend like you're confident. You pretend like, you know, you're not worried. And the guys around you who are looking at you then all of a sudden feel better. You know, if you can bring one or two of those guys along in a tough spot, then that, you know, you've done your job. So that's the thing that I look for from leaders down this stretch run. It's not so much about overlooking somebody, because everybody knows the importance of every game. It's in those moments of struggle who grabs you and pulls you across the finish line.
This is such a great point. And I want to go back to it real quick because I do. It bothers me when people, you know, the team comes out and they get upset, right? And instantly it turns into that they weren't prepared or they didn't care. They took them too light or, you know. I say this to people in everyday life. You wake up and go for a run. Some days you wake up and for whatever reason, you're spry, right? And you just feel like you're running. Other days you go out and you can go half of what you normally go and it feels like you got a 1,000-pound rock on your back. There's just days where you go out and your legs or your arms and it's just not feeling it. And by God, this happens in football. And it's not something that anyone wants to happen, but everyone that has played the game in a high level has been in that game where you go to the sidelines and you turn to your teammate for whatever reason, like, dude, I don't know what it is. Like, I'm a step slow, or it's just, it's off, or I'm struggling with my snap, or I'm throwing high, or, you know, it's just, and we all believe this thing to be some sort of lack of focus or whatever. It is really hard for 19, 20, 21-year-old young men for 13 weeks to be up and be at your best every single week. So I just thought that was a really good point that if someone does get upset, it's not necessarily because they wanted it or they didn't care or they didn't prepare.
Right. That's why you see. And the example that always jumps into my mind. Remember a few years ago with Oklahoma State, it was Brandon Whedon and, oh God, who was the wide receiver? Was it Dez Bryant? I think it was the guy after Dez Bryant. I mean, they were, you know, on their stretch for the first, you know, they were number two in the country. And last week of the, literally the last week of the season, like somebody who had no business beating them just got them.
Yeah.
And it happens literally every single year. And it's not because they weren't focused. And it wasn't because they took their opponent lightly. It wasn't because they didn't realize the gravity of the moment. It's simply because after, like you said, what, 11 games, after a month of training camp, after 3 to 4 months of doing this to your body every single day, that at the end of it, they just didn't have it. And sometimes that happens. And that's what you need your leaders for. That's what you need those guys to recognize and rally the troops. That's why you need those senior leaders.
Well, it's pretty special what Oregon's got going on if they can finish this off. I mean, I think it's only been 8 times that a team has run the table in the league. 8. I mean,
it's
like,
hard.
Like you guys are saying, yeah, it's we take that for granted.
We couldn't, you know, on both of our teams, even the team when we finished number 2 in the country, we didn't run the table.
Right.
And the year before, we got all the way through until the Civil War game. And, you know, that's the whole Joey Five Picks thing. I mean, it happens because it is extremely difficult to go from start to finish.
Could it be Justin Blackmon that you were thinking of?
Yeah. There you go.
There is.
Boy, they had so many good receivers that come through there.
Oh, receiver
you. Yeah. There.
So, you okay with the college football playoff rankings? You think, are you one of those guys that thinks that's all just going to sort itself out?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same idea that, you know, people were jumping ship once we lost to Auburn week 1. It's like, okay, just be patient. If I'm going to pick one thing to be a little bit about, you know, it might be the Georgia over the top of Oregon, but I can understand, you know, them taking, you know, the Georgia beat Florida, and you know they're giving that Notre Dame win a lot of credit. I can understand that. But look, the thing that makes me a little bit nervous about this is the situation that could play out where, let's say, LSU loses to Alabama this weekend on a 1-point game, you know, at the buzzer, right? And then Alabama and Georgia play each other in the SEC championship game. Well, whether it's, you know, Georgia beating Alabama to have 3 1 loss teams, or whether it's Alabama running the table, I'm still afraid of that LSU team that's sitting there with one loss, like in the same situation like Alabama was a few years ago, where they didn't even play in the conference championship game. But there's such a level of respect for those programs that you could see that LSU team or Alabama team, whichever it is, being voted in at the end. That's the thing that makes me a little nervous with this setup. Other than that, I mean, I could very easily see the Oregon-Utah game being a play-in. You know, Ohio State and Penn State are going to play each other. Penn State and Minnesota play each other. There's a lot of football left to be played. And I think for the most part, it will sort itself out. You know, worst case scenario is you end up with 11 one-loss teams and you're playing that coin toss game. But I think, you know, you see it every year. 2 to 3 teams are going to be very solid, and then you'll have a discussion about that last team.
Yeah, it's scary. Not only do you have the LSU thing, but Penn State and Ohio State, you could face that same thing, because both of those, if Ohio State or and Penn State only have the one loss, or one of them has a one loss and it's to the other and it's close, same sort of thing. LSU and Ohio State and Penn State at one loss are going to have a really, really good resume with probably, you're looking at 4 to 5 quality top 25 wins, and Oregon and Utah are going to have one.
I don't see, let's say Ohio State beats Penn State, right? I don't see Penn State garnering the same amount of respect nationally as the second place SEC team does. I don't disagree with your logic, but I think that the committee would be more apt to put in a one-loss Pac-12 conference champion, or
flip,
you know,
that and say,
you know,
one-loss. But what if it's Ohio State's? What if it's Ohio State that's the one-loss team?
That's trouble.
You're in trouble.
Hey, what do you think about this game against Arizona next week? Am I changing the subject a little enough? I don't know. I mean, those are the situations that you hope you don't end up in, or you hope that, you know, people will value the. I'm a big proponent of valuing a conference championship.
Totally agree. Right?
If you can make it all the way through and truly win your conference, that means a lot to me. And not to discredit, let's say an Ohio State losing to Penn State and finishing with one loss, or an LSU losing to Alabama and finishing with one loss, but they don't play that extra game, right? They don't play. They don't have that one remaining opportunity to, I don't say to risk getting knocked off or to not lose, but it's a big deal, right? It's not so much that you won this game, it's that you didn't lose. Like, you survived that gauntlet, and whereas the other teams didn't, and that means something to me.
And style points, you know, style points matter these next three games. If you got an opportunity to rack some up, make it look better than, well, like, for example, Clemson always seems to do this. Clemson always seems to have – Dabo seems – I mean, I don't want to say run it up. I'm at a loss for words for what you call it. But just, you know, style points. You need those.
Yeah, they've earned a little bit of respect. But I think the best-case scenario for anybody outside of the SEC is for Clemson to lose. You know, Clemson loses, and now we got ourselves a real big picture.
That's huge. I'm just saying, like, for Oregon's last three games, look, you got a chance to put an extra 10 to 14 points on top of it. And it's so taboo to say run it up, but you kind of need that. Like, the end of the USC game was important. Not only did they come back and win that game, they put their foot on their throat. And that I think matters for perception if it's going to be a beauty contest.
True, but I also think what I think may matter more is what Utah does, right? If Utah goes out and flips up against, you know, a surging UCLA this weekend, you know, people forget that UCLA is the team that actually controls the South right now. That's scary. And I think what Utah does down the stretch will actually be more important than what Oregon does, considering, you know, let's say Oregon wins out and just kind of like, you know, they win, they're good. But that opportunity for Utah to improve their visibility nationally, and then for Oregon to beat them in the championship game, I think that will actually play better than, you know, putting up a couple extra touchdowns against Arizona.
Yeah. I got you. All right, sir. We will talk to you next week. Thank you.
You betcha, guys.
Joey Harrington, every Friday, 5:30, courtesy of BMW Portland. Let's move on to the club next on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.